Our next speaker, Bob McMillan, a friend of mine, he'll come down here. Hello. Good to be here tonight. And thanks, Doug, for inviting me. Never actually been invited to tell this story. I've related it lots of times, and it's just kind of an interesting thing to be asked to relate it, because it happened quite a long time ago, almost 20 years ago at this point. Let me give you a little background first. I grew up the oldest of five kids, and my dad was an angerholic. He was an alcoholic, and he went down the anger road instead. And that's how he burned it off. That's how he kept it. He kept himself somewhat under control. At least every once in a while, he'd experience tremendous outbursts of anger. And as the oldest son, I was usually the one who caught most of that brunt. So I grew up thinking that I was doing something wrong. And it wasn't until about 16 that I figured out that it really wasn't me. It had very little to do with me. And then when I realized that, I got really angry myself. The problem was, at that point, I had been the brunt of so many whippings and so many getting pulled up into the upstairs bedroom and getting beat on kind of things. I really didn't know what to do with it. I figured I was a permanent victim. And so I walked around in high school, my high school years, one of the toughest high schools in New Jersey, being a victim. And so I went from getting beat at home by my dad to being beaten at school by people that were much larger and stronger and, frankly, a lot nastier than I'll ever be. And so it was kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting to transfer into that next mode of getting beat on. But anyway, as life went by, I decided one day that I was going to get control. And around age 24 or so, I took up karate. And that was after I had gotten chased out of a bar by a guy I'd gone to high school with. And as I'd met him there, I remembered that he was one of the worst offenders. And I figured, this is way behind us now. We're like 24 years. We're adults. This is all past now, right? No, nothing like that. He just said, oh, there's that guy you should beat on him. I bet I could beat on him again. And I ended up running out of that bar that night because I frankly did not want to face him. And of course, when we do that, we hate ourselves because I was a coward, and I knew I was a coward, and I knew I didn't want to get beat on, and I didn't know how to stop him. And I was afraid because I didn't know how to stop him. I was afraid all the time. So I decided I was going to do something about it. And for the next couple of years, I started lifting weights, and I got really strong. And I got really strong and fast. And I was walking around like this, yeah, I can handle it now. And then I decided I would take the next step, and I went to karate. And if you thought you were tough when you're big and strong, well, you get a couple years of karate under your belt, and there's probably very few people that can face up to you. I don't care, a 350-pound weightlifter cannot touch a guy that's really well-schooled in martial arts. It's just not going to happen. The guy just knows too much. He understands how to handle himself. And that is actually what got me in trouble. Because now, I didn't have to be afraid of expressing my anger anymore. And I got to be the bully to other people if that's what I wanted to do. But mostly I kept it to people that I would fight in the ring. And I loved fighting in the ring because I'd get up to that ring and I'd see that guy across. And you ever see those guys like on wrestling and they're all hyped up and they want to kill the other guy? It's a big act. For me, it was no act. I wanted to kill the guy and I had the opportunity to kill him if I wanted to do it. And I just hit him as hard as I wanted to and just say, hey, it's a fight. Come on. You're supposed to pull your punches. That's okay. They get away sometimes. And so I would get out there, and I'd face that guy on the other side of the ring, and I just pull up all the hate, just load up with it, and I could just feel it, and I would get stronger and stronger. It was like I was going all the way over the dark side as far as I could. And I was getting stronger and stronger, just like the evil emperor, and he pretty much nearly wins the whole thing, doesn't he, the evil emperor? And I was much like that. So I thought I was basically on the road to eventually being a world-class fighter. And I was going to fight in the World United Karate Organization, which is the only sanctioned organization for people in traditional styles of karate. And that's what I was shooting for, and I figured it would be a couple of years. And I would get a gold medal, and I would get sponsored by Budweiser, and they'd build me a dojo, and I'd go on tour. And that's exactly what happened to the only guy from the United States who's ever won in that venue. He became exactly that guy, and he made $1 million a year. Pretty good deal for being a really hateful, angry guy, huh? So there's a higher power out there that, frankly, I had dismissed at about age 16 when I used to go into church and dip my hand in the holy water, bless myself, and then walk out the back door and go to the diner just so the people that knew me could see that I was going to church. And so my life was coming to a head, and I didn't know it. So I was about 3 months away from getting my black belt. My sensei had pretty much told me that, and that was a big deal. He'd only had about 20 black belts in 20 years of teaching, which tells you in what esteem he held that black belt and how good I must have been in order to get ready to get that black belt. I was having issues at work. I hated that job, and I would go in there every day, and I would do exactly the same thing. I work for this this company whose official colors are purple and orange, and they absolutely positively promise to get things over there overnight. That's who I work for. And my job is to take boxes from large containers and put them into small containers. And man, I really hated that job. I was in charge of a bunch of other folks, and we'd go down there every day. And when we go down there, there was this other group of people. They'd sit right about over there where the curtain was, and they'd watch us. And they'd drink coffee, and they'd run out to the coffee wagon, and they'd get crullers, and they'd come back and eat them. And they'd go, yeah, look at those guys. They're throwing those boxes. That's too bad. And so I went to their boss, and I said, you know, those guys are on permanent break. Do you think they could come over and give us a hand? And they said, we'll think about it. Because let's face it, it's not a popular thing if your folks are sitting there doing nothing and you're the manager to tell them they have to go to work. And so I went up the chain of command like I was supposed to do. I talked to my boss, I talked to their boss, and I went to the top guy in the whole building, and nobody cared. And I was really angry that these guys weren't working. And so one day, I lost it. I just had had enough, and I just, my head, the top of my head just about came off. And so we had these big containers. They weighed about 500 pounds. And you have to put boxes into them. Rita knows all about those containers. She's had her own issues with containers before. And so I picked up one of these containers because I needed one to come over where I was. And those guys didn't want me to have one. They said, no, go out in the yard two stories down and 100 feet away and go get one, please. And I lost it right then. And I picked that container up by the edge.
And I pulled it up and I dragged it across the floor.
And all the guys sitting over by the curtain said, you better put that container back right now or we're going to get our boss. And I dropped that container and I said, you better sit down right now or I'm going to kick your behind, each and every one of you. And my language was much, much more colorful. I wasn't at the edge off the guy. And then I dropped it and I felt good. And I said, that's right, I'm better than you are. I can take you out right now. You can do nothing to stop me. And I just felt so good. My anger was in full control. Anyway, so they went and got their boss. His name was Bob Rizzo. He's a little feisty Italian guy, and I hated his guts. And he came out across the floor with his hands in his pockets. What's this? My boys are telling me you're taking our kids. And I put my nose right up in his face, and I called him and his mother every name in the world. And I punctuated it with F's in between. And I was really on a roll. I was getting it all out. And as it came across the floor, and the only thing I wanted to do was hit him in the throat. And all my vision went down to that Adam's apple. And my arm cocked. And it just pulled back. And that hand was coming out. It was just coming. There's nothing I could do to stop it. That head, that throat was going through the back of his neck. And had I done that, he'd more than likely have died. And I would have been in jail for the rest of my life. But I didn't. And I don't know why I did. To this day, I cannot figure out why I didn't hit him. And I thought from time to time that I was getting a little help getting that arm pulled back and held back. And I think that's the only reason I can think of why I did. Because everything that I knew and that I was capable of says you should have thrown that punch. I felt absolutely justified to throw that punch. So, when he said, one more word out of you and you will be fired. And I stopped all that outflow of anger. And I swallowed it back down because I really needed the job. I figured I had no other job. I had no other skills. I needed this job. I was making a fair amount of money there. And as it went down, it burned. It was like swallowing a big, hot lump of asphalt. And it burned all the way down to my gut. And when it got to my gut, I got this headache. At this point, I was in tears. I just turned and I walked away. I called my boss, and I'm never going down there again, because you can let me go if you want, but I will never go down there again. And I just clocked out and went home. But I had this headache. And I couldn't get rid of this headache, and I went home and I had a couple beers. Because that's what I usually did. Come around noontime, I'd have a few beers, get the day off to the right start. I was working second shift. I was working a midnight shift, so I was just getting ready in the morning. And I'd go out and have a few beers. And I had a few coffee, then I had some aspirins. And I'm going on and on. The day's going on. The headache won't go away. I couldn't figure out why. And finally, I lay down that night, and that annoying little headache finally relented. And as it did, I felt somebody had washed my back. Throwing a bucket full of water, warm water down my back. That's exactly what it felt like. It just felt like it went back. And I reached my hand back there. And I looked around because I was living home. My brothers were there. They were always good for something like that. So there was nothing there. I couldn't figure out what it was. And at that very moment, the headache released. It was gone. And a minute later, I realized there's something very wrong. And what had happened was I had had an aneurysm. For those of you with a medical background, it happened in the Circle of Willis. There actually turned out to be a couple other ones up there that didn't go. But what happens with an aneurysm is, in your brain, is the blood fills that space between the cavity of the brain and the skull, and it pushes down. And when it pushes down, you die. But I did not. And somehow it escaped down my neck and into my chest cavity. But it did the damage while it was there. I got up from bed and I said, wow, that feels really bad. And then I had a seizure, and then I vomited, and then my whole body went to flu. Everything that happened, every place that something came out of, something came out of. And your body just, it's just not like anything I'd ever experienced before. It was a complete and total meltdown of my physical self. The next thing I realized, there was an ambulance there, and it felt like somebody had this big old ice pick, and they were just working it in my brain for all they were worth. It was just the most excruciating thing I'd ever experienced. And so, I'm literally screaming in pain, make it stop, make it stop. There's a guy in the ambulance squad came over, he's a guy I had gone to school with, and I tried to speak intelligently to him for a minute, and then I passed out again. The next thing I knew, I was in the emergency room. And I don't remember being able to move or speak. I just remember I was there. I knew my dad was there. And I was still in this incredible pain. And they were talking to my dad about what was wrong. And so far, they hadn't given me anything for the pain. And I didn't know why. And then I heard that they were trying to figure out what it was. I remember, the next thing I remember is about 2 hours later, and the pain's gone. And I've been medicated. And I hear my dad talking to the doctor. And this is what the doctor said to my father. So, Mr. McMillan, your son's had an aneurysm. He saw blood in his ocular fluid. And so we believe he is bleeding internally in the brain, and we don't think he's going to make it. And you should call some clergy if you feel so disposed, because we don't think he's going to make it much longer. If he makes it till tomorrow morning, we give him a 50-50 chance, but the odds are he's not going to make it. And I heard all this, and I couldn't like talk or cry out or anything, but I said, I'm 28 years old, I'm in the best shape of my life. I'm going to be karate champion. This can't be happening. And about 30 minutes or so later, I remember feeling some oil drip down the front of my nose, and a Catholic priest is there, and he's giving me last rites. And now, if you grew up in the Catholic Church, and somebody's giving you last rites, you know that only means one thing. You are definitely going to die. You only experience this sacrament one time, and that's when you die. And sometimes you get to the laughter that you die. I wasn't dead yet, obviously. And so, but I was experiencing it, and this suddenly caused me to turn inward. And so this is the most important part of what I have to tell you, is this moment that I experienced as I turned inward. The first thing I saw was all the events of my life in a chain, neatly stacked one on top of the other, just like this, snaking along. And it was the time this had happened, the time this had happened, the time this had happened, the time this had happened. And in every circumstance, I knew or understood, had built one on the other to bring me to this point in my life. And I was to understand that it was nobody else's fault that those things had happened, or how I had responded to them, was only up to me and to no one else. And the reason that I was sitting here at this moment now is because the way I responded to all those things in my life, I had these other realizations at the same time. And they were this: soon you will be gone, and you will not be remembered. And that was pretty harsh. Because I think we all go around thinking, we're pretty good guys. And yeah, and if we die tomorrow, maybe we'll have a funeral, people will be out in front. But I knew for a fact that my family would be pretty hurt. But Bob was pretty hard to live with. And so I wouldn't probably spend a lot of time in anybody's mind anytime soon. And that was a pretty sad thought. And then the thought came, I was 20 years old, I had never married. Why hadn't I married? Well, you had other things on your mind, Bob. You were focused on other things. I haven't gotten that. That seemed really important to me. That maybe I should have been married already. Maybe I should have found somebody to spend my life instead of being so focused on me. And so I started to feel really sad about this. And then I realized I was going to meet God. And that was pretty amazing, because I didn't necessarily believe that God existed. But all of a sudden, I was pretty sure I was going to meet God. And it was going to be a bad thing. And in fact, I thought God was going to be very angry with me. And somebody came in and changed that thought immediately and flipped it and said, no, he's going to be disappointed. And if you can think of anything that's worse than having God be disappointed in me, I think I'd rather have him be really ticked off, but disappointed, like I really blew it, or like I didn't get it right, whatever I was set here to learn. That seemed much, much worse to me. And then the despair set in. And this is all happening internally, and I'm just kind of, things are getting kind of blacker and blacker, and this is what the doctor's saying, and you're going to die now. And I'm kind of going down, and I feel like I really, really screwed up. I have done something incredibly wrong, and this is it. It's over. I have no other chance. And all of a sudden, this voice spoke up. And it took me years to figure out what the voice was, but all I knew was it was definitely not me. It wasn't that internal dialogue that we constantly keep up, so patting ourselves on the back, telling us what great guys we are. Definitely wasn't that voice. The voice said, "Don't worry, Bob. You're not going to die." And my whole conscious, my whole subconscious, whatever is under there that answers back goes, "Holy crap! What was that? That wasn't me. That was somebody else." And I said, "Oh, there's really somebody else." And then I passed out. And I woke up at 5:30 the next morning, and I was just fine. And I woke up and I had a couple seizures that day, and people that I had made small impacts on snuck into the hospital, said they were members of my family, and they were sitting by my bed when I woke up. And I realized that as self-centered as I had been, that I made a good impression on a couple people, and men had no idea how important that suddenly was to me. But the other thing that I realized was that this huge crunching weight of hate was gone. And I didn't know how it was gone. But it was gone. I felt about 100 pounds lighter. Wow, what's that? And all I could think as I saw these friends was how beautiful they were. And how amazing they were. And thank God for the little small thing I must have done to make this person think I was somebody worth caring about, that they would want to sneak into the hospital. Because that was the most amazing thing about the whole morning. I said, "Wow, I made a good impression. I didn't realize that last night." I had a lot more experiences since then. I can tell you this, karate was not as important after the experience. It just wasn't. I didn't have that need. I didn't feel the anger there anymore. And I just couldn't go out and beat the crap out of somebody. It makes you a lot worse than karate when you're like that. It's not good to have all that. But I got interested in something else, and I realized that I had focused everything on other people instead of looking at me. And I took up rock climbing, where you can get really pissed off at the rock. But frankly, the rock doesn't care. So I took up rock climbing, and I just made it all about me. I wanted to be a good rock climber, and I wanted to focus on me. And it took me out to one of the greatest places to rock climb in the world. Anybody know where it is? It's Utah. It's American Fork. World-class rock climbing in American Fork. And so it's funny how we get led in these turning points and these jump-off points in our life. Because I got led out here, and I met my wife, who, frankly, if she knew what I was really like, she wouldn't have touched me with a 10-foot pole. But after I got out of that hospital, man, I was like, man, I was this wonderful spiritual Bob, and I was trotting around like this big glowing aura around myself. Somebody told me that, I couldn't see it, but I believe it. And I met my wife, and she was completely taken in. She's like, "Yeah, if I'd have known, I'd have won." But anyway, I met her. She happened to be a Utah girl. She was living out there. She had been a nanny for a few years, and I met her in karate. And next thing you know, I have this wife, and we're out here in Utah. And frankly, a lot of things haven't changed. Because one of the things I did after that experience was I went to confession. And this priest was there in the hospital, and I went and I told him all these things and what a rotten guy I was. So what a weird feeling of being ready to unload and just really, go ahead, lay that repentant, lay that, whatever I have to do. Give me that 5,000 Hail Marys. Give it to me, and I would be fine with it, and I know it was all good to go. He's like, "No, you're fine. You just went through a really bad thing. It's okay." And I was like, "No, I didn't know it. I was much worse than that." And I had a lot of questions then about being a Catholic because, frankly, I had grown up in what I thought was a church that was the church, and I didn't know any better. And so I went looking, and I couldn't find anything. As a matter of fact, it took me years to find it out and really get the answer to that aspect. And that actually completed quite a bit of the puzzle for me. So anyway, here I am. Obviously, I've had a few experiences since then, because you know what? If you don't actually spend a lot of time and energy fixing the stuff you know is wrong with you, it doesn't get taken away. You get those things for a reason. You get those things because you need them. You need them to teach you what you need to do next in your life. You need to be able to look inside and say, you really need to change. You need to fix these things. And they can come overnight. You have to work on them a little bit every day and take small steps. And one day you'll look down the road and go, "Look, that guy, that really rotten guy, is way back there now. And I'm the fool." And it's a good place to be, but I also know how much more I have to go. Believe me, I've got a long way to go, no question about it. However, I want to tell you that there is a supreme being out there that knows us and loves us and sent us here and created us and put us here for a reason. And because he loves us so much, he's really willing to let us screw up largely. I mean, in incredible ways that most of us can barely imagine. And guess what? It's the best thing that can ever happen to us. So you know what? I just want to say, I've looked around the audience tonight, but I always do a little countenance check when I walk in. And some of you guys are carrying some really heavy burdens. I just want you to know that person is out there. And you can get in touch with that higher power. They will love you and you will feel their love. So put that other stuff aside and just take it in. and let that other stuff go. It's really not all that important. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
You said you finally figured out who or what the voice was.
I did. It took me. I ended just the fact that I ended up out in Utah should tell you a lot. I was a big outdoorsman. Frankly, after I didn't get a quick answer to what that who that voice was or what that voice was, it took me a lot of time to figure it out. As a matter of fact, I had to be completely humbled all over again in order to receive that. But the fact that I came out here to Utah, and I think the thing I learned at this point, there's only one reason people come to Utah, and that's to become members of the LDS Church. And that's my personal belief. I've seen it happen a lot of times. I'm 100% fine if that belief isn't shared. I believe everybody is on their own path, and they'll figure it out to whatever degree they can figure it out, or that they're supposed to, or able to figure it out. For me, it meant a lot. I found out about the church, and I had an incredible conversion experience. I'd love to share that with you. If you ever feel like talking about it one-on-one, I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
So for you, it was a divine...
It was. Yeah, it was. Because I heard that voice again years later, and I was like, wait, I know that voice. As a matter of fact, I had to have that experience of having that 100 pounds pulled off me again. And so I was like, wait a second, I felt this before, and I know that voice. And so I put two and two together, and I got a pretty straightforward answer.
In the way martial arts... Well, when it's in Asia, it's connected with a philosophy as well. But I don't think anger has a lot of currency.
It really doesn't. Either. It really doesn't. I think this just has to do with the way that things get Americanized sometimes. I feel like bringing here, my sensei was a very angry guy. He represented a lot of things in life which were far less than what they should have been. I realized after the fact, I'm actually a much better martial artist now. I teach my kids karate. I'm a much better martial artist now than I've ever been. Because frankly, I do get it. You know, we're here to kind of figure out how our life is working, and we can subdue anger, and we can look outwards and be loving towards other people. And a lot of the martial arts has to actually do with the best martial arts is a guy who will never, ever, ever get in a fight. So he'll know where not to be, or if he feels that anger being directed, he'll just step aside and let it go.
What do you think you learned from your life review? I mean, that was kind of a sort of like a lot of people have that when they have near-death experience.
Uh-huh. And I'm a big fan of near-death experiences. I've read pretty much everything there is on the net. And I think I learned the same thing as everybody else, that I really screwed up and I needed to do for the brain. So in a nutshell, that's what it was. I'd seen how my anger had taken over, had become a driving force in my life. I had allowed it to do so. And that there was something else out there. I needed to go find what it was. And I can tell you, I made pretty good strides in that direction. And hopefully I won't get back to that point ever again. I'll have to do this whole thing over again.
Yeah. Did your insight, was it able to feed back for your dad? Was there any way you were able to, because it looks like I see a lot of chains down families.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's alcohol or anger, a thousand things that are passed on.
Yeah,
absolutely. I wonder if you can help him. Was it able to?
I'll tell you what happened. I have talked to my dad about some of those things. My dad went through, because of all his anger, in the same way I had an aneurysm, my dad ended up having severe depression and had to go to electric shock treatments. And he went for years. And all this anger that I had aimed towards my dad had no place to go. But at 30 years old, I was pretty angry all over again. And he would call up on the phone, and I would feel his anger come racing up. I'm like, why is this, man? How did I let this go already? I'm like, found out how pointless it was. And the fact is that I ended up going to the field of social work, had foster kids, ended up working with those kids and seeing all their anger and seeing, wow, that's me all over again. And I went into emotional release. And I attended a school down in Pleasant Grove for about a year. I learned how to do emotional release. I went around helping people get rid of their anger. I went to talk to my dad about it a number of times. He is not, has very little connection to really what has come in the past. Almost to the point where he doesn't recognize it. I believe part of it's self-induced and part of it's the electrical shock. He has permanent issues. He says as he walks around, he feels a pressure here all the time, and he has permanent nausea in his stomach. And he doesn't know why. No doctor's ever been able to figure it out for him. Pretty good idea what it is.
Did you talk to him?
I have. My dad's a very religious guy, and spends a fair amount of time in prayer. The only thing I can tell you for sure is that he's not making the connection that he's supposed to. A lot of it has to do with failing to forgive himself for things that he's done in his life. I can tell you this. At one point, my dad said this to me, and it's pretty important too. He said, Bob, he said, I want you to know, because I don't remember a lot of the stuff that you say I did. So I just want you to know, I'm sorry. And as he did, another 35 pounds came right off. And I was like, wow, be madder than anyone, because he just said he's sorry. And so then I got, again, to look at myself and go, okay, what part of me is still
take off over there.
I was wondering if you ever talked to your dad about maybe the way he was raised?
Mm-hmm. Talked to him lots of times. There's a thing that happens with people when we do emotional release with them. It's called I don't know. And you ask them a question, you go, what did you feel about this? And they go, I don't know. Now, you know about this thing in your life. You know that it happened. You know that your dad ignored you or treated you like crap or was an alcoholic and beat the son out of you on a regular basis. And how is it possible that you don't know how you feel about that? But that's how people deal with their emotions a lot of times. They just tuck them into a nice little ball and they pack them away and they leave it for a future date. And some people get cancer and some people have to have their gallbladders removed and some people go nuts and shoot people in public places. Everybody's anger gets addressed in a different way. My dad's not able to see all that, and so I feel, you know, after very prayerful figuring out the situation, I feel like I've done as much as I can to try and help him with that. Thank you so much for your time. You guys are awesome.